But I'm sitting by all these little plugs, and I thought maybe they were getting overheated, David.
No, those things don't.
So
I can't even talk anymore. No. I'm okay now.
Okay,
I think.
Okay, don't.
Some water?
Don't croak. No, don't croak.
I won't croak. I might, but I won't.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shope.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 9 of Theater Geeks. This episode is entitled
God, I hope I get it.
Or Auditions, the First Step. They are the first step, sort of. Although not really for the director. The director's done a lot of prep up front.
But for the actor.
You hope, well, but for the actor, it's the first step.
Right.
We were talking a few minutes ago about how, especially in community theaters, once in a while you get actresses or actors who come in and say, and overdo it, or overplay it, or come in dressed as the character they want to be, and they do, and it's just, as a director, I've always thought, you're too cute by half, I'm sorry, this is just not the right way to go. I don't know, what do you all think?
I've never had anybody come in dressed the part.
I've seen that. By the way, I forgot to do one thing beforehand because this is her third episode with us. Dee Dee Lovejoy is here.
Deirdre
Lovejoy, actress. Everybody knows. We know her as Dee Dee. This is Marcia's daughter who is here in the Midwest, in the beautiful Midwest. She's left the ugly Southern California weather.
Sunshine is terrible.
To come back here. Sunshine is just god awful out there. To come and join us. Dee Dee is a professional actress, has been was a regular for 5 seasons. How many?
5 seasons
on HBO's The Wire, and has if you will know her face from numerous episodes of things like CIS and Law and Order and
One of my favorites.
Right, CSI. I'm sorry, CSI.
No, the closure was great.
Never done a CSI, but it's the same thing. Same thing, doesn't matter.
Nip Tuck, when she played the mother of the girl that had her face ripped off. I like that one.
Oh, Nip Tuck. I didn't know she'd done Nip Tuck. But she's done Broadway and regional theater and all kinds of things all over the place. So,
She's
an honorary theater geek.
That's most important.
Theater geek. That's like my daughter. My daughter used to say, I'm not a geek, Daddy.
But now it's important to be a geek.
It's important to be a geek. Anyway.
Okay.
So, but with auditions, can you overdo it? If you're an actor, as an actor, can you come in and exude, not necessarily too much confidence, but too much like of a, boy, I'm a suck-up attitude kind of thing. Can you do that? Is that possible?
Boy, I'm a suck-up attitude?
I don't know.
Do you find these people that audition, Jake?
Lord. There are people who, when they walk in the building, they come to the director's table and they want to make sure they introduce themselves. And it gets a little like, okay, hi, how are you? I've got things to do, move on. It feels like they're trying just a little bit too hard. And I have been in an audition where somebody dressed like Nellie Forbush in their little sailor's outfit when they were auditioning for South Pacific.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. So I do want to say that it does happen.
Yes, I do remember
it does
that.
Happen.
I remember.
That was years ago, though.
It was, though.
I remember when we were doing, not Annie Get Your Gun, but, well, it might have been Annie Get Your Gun. It could have been Oklahoma. But one of the females came in dressed in Western wear of some sort, you know, and with a kerchief and everything. She looked a little too cute for
Annie.
I think it has to depend somewhat on whether you're having the auditioners read cold from the script or whether you've asked them to bring in a minute or 2 minutes of a prepared monologue. You know,
but mainly
we have people read from the script.
Cold reading auditions. We don't have memorization auditions, although we have done some vocal auditions where people have brought their own vocal work. But I still think that when an actor walks in, the way you dress can help you feel more like a character. Now, I'm not saying that you should dress like a character, but our past artistic director, Leslie Torok, always says this, and I agree, that if you're coming to audition for a show that takes place in the 1930s, 1920s, 1940s, 1950s even, and you're a woman, don't come dressed in pants, because very few women wore pants. Come dressed in a skirt. Come, you know, it gives you a different feel, the way you move, the way you handle yourself. Mm-hmm. I often, if I'm auditioning for a show of that era, I'll wear a tie to the audition, just because it makes me hold my body differently.
There's a difference between that, though, and coming in a full blown.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, hat, gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
Jewelry, jacket.
You're exactly right.
Pulling up in a 1950s car.
But that initial clothing can help you start a character process in your head, so that when you're standing on stage, even doing a cold reading, that you carry yourself differently. And I don't necessarily believe in cold readings, and I wish more of my performers would understand this. But they don't. They come and they do cold readings. But my scripts are available for every show on the season at the beginning of the year.
Oh,
and they
okay.
never, very few of them take that advantage and come and check out a script and read it and know what character they want to audition for, make sure it's right for them, and get an idea of what the show is before they come, so that it's a cold reading. If you can't see my fingers doing the quotation marks, but it's a cold reading, but it's not really cold because they've had a chance to familiarize themselves with the script.
Well, it's still cold reading if they don't know exactly what they're reading, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, but if they're familiar with the script, at least they kind of have an idea of where the characters are coming
sure.
from, how it relates, and what the storyline is.
Yeah.
A lot of times actors come and they have no idea what the story is, which they could kind of solve if they got the script, because we make
yeah.
that available. Now, not you can't necessarily do that if you're auditioning for a brand new show where the script's never been produced.
Well, actually, but. When auditioning for plays, you always have to read the play. And if it's a new play, they always make the play available to you. It's very rare that they would just give you sides without any context, because how are you supposed to audition? So that's a good
point. And
yeah.
I think that's a much better way to do it than asking people to prepare a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I just as a director, I can just kind of feel that I can, if they're reading from the script and they have familiarized themselves with it beforehand, I just think maybe it's just me. I will get a much better feeling for how they could do a particular part than if they brought in like Lady Macbeth's mad scene from the Scottish play. You know, I mean, that doesn't, if we're doing a modern comedy, that doesn't tell me much about what they can do necessarily.
And I don't, I'm kind of a fan of cold reading and cold singing, even for like a musical audition. I think it's okay if somebody comes in prepared, but it's really, what's
you're
that?
Mean.
No,
you're
because
mean.
I have lived through a very bad situation where somebody auditioned wonderfully. And they auditioned with the piece that their vocal coach taught them. And they auditioned with the scene that their acting coach taught them.
And then they were
terrible.
They
walked out on the stage and they had no ability whatsoever to do what they needed to do, to the point where they had to have somebody else stand behind a curtain and sing the notes because the girl couldn't
remind
hit the
me
notes.
Later to ask you who
wow.
that was.
So, you know,
so I can avoid
so
them in the future.
That whole issue could have been solved if at the audition they had forced that girl to do a cold sing. They would have known there's no way she could ever be cast in the role that they cast her in, because she would not have been able to do it.
Well, usually what happens in professional situations, not necessarily community theater situations, but you have to come in with something prepared,
mm-hmm.
and then your callback, they teach you the numbers from the show, or you know, they have you sing
right.
numbers from the show.
And I think different community theaters work differently. I know that Kalamazoo Civic Theater works very much more on having prepared pieces before, and then they do a callback. We don't do callbacks very often at our theater. We do just a set of auditions, and then that's where it goes from there.
Wow.
So
how do you do that?
Well,
that's hard.
Just happens.
Isn't it? That's impressive.
We just,
see, this is what I mean. You put a play together with like 2 hours rehearsal three times a week, and you see them once, and you can't.
But the audition process sometimes is much more extensive too. I mean, whereas if you have something memorized, and then we want to see you for a callback, that's a different kind of audition. Our auditions sometimes last three and a half hours. because you do the cold readings and you do the cold sings and then you dance and then you have them read again. And
yeah, I mean, it's not even a cold.
Oh, so you kind of do callbacks, but you just do it all in one day.
It all happens at
pretty
once.
Much.
Yeah. And you teach people the song and then they get up and do it and then you teach them the dance. Then they do it as a group and you sort of.
And if I like
and
them,
in community theater, everybody's watching each other.
Yeah.
Other people are watching the. So right. That's a different situation.
One thing that I don't like about that is when they're watching each other and when they finish, everybody applauds. Well,
well, that's polite.
But you know, you can learn.
What do you want them to do? Throw tomatoes?
No, I just want them to sit there and think, okay, that was fine. On to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, we're not judging like American Idol about how many much applause or how many calling votes.
Oh, yes, we are.
Okay, we are.
But and one of the things that I also like kind of about cold readings is that if you're the first person that stands up, it's always, oh my gosh, I have to be the first person to do the scene.
Yeah, that's
but if
so
you're the
true.
Second person, you get a chance to kind of sit and watch
or
and,
the third or fourth
and
or
think
fifth.
And listen if you're really in tune to the whole process. So that when you stand up, your reading is completely different, hopefully, than somebody else's. And I think it's important. You know, you're saying, can you overdo an audition? Well, I think you can overdo it if you come dressed like the character or something like that. But I think it's important to show as much versatility in an audition as possible. So as long as the director is willing to kind of go with the flow, I'll give a reading and I might do two or three different takes on the character if I get a chance to read that same character two or three times.
Right.
Unless I really want a character. And sometimes what I found in the audition process, if I really, really want a character really, really bad and I just play that character the same way each time, I never get the part.
Really?
I never get the part that I thought I was going to get. Yeah. So I just have gone in. I think it's really important for people to kind of relax at an audition and just kind of go with the flow. And I think it's very easy to get uptight, but it's just
auditions
relax.
Auditions are scary.
They're scary, but hopefully if you just kind of have fun. I wish more people could just say, this is going to be fun. Let's go and have a good time. And whatever comes, comes, you know.
Well, and then if the director gives direction too, it can also help. I think, you know what I think? Actually, in community theater, it's almost like, to me, it seems like the worst thing that an actor can do, and this has nothing to do with, this is more technique than acting abilities so much, but the hardest, the surest way to not get a part is to get up there and just not be loud enough. I mean, just, you know, and it's because it says so many things about who you are as an actor. I mean, it says, A, I really don't know what I'm doing. B, it says, I don't have any confidence in, you know, getting up here. It says I'm afraid to make mistakes, which is why I'm talking really softly. And it's a lot of things are involved there. And if you ask someone that they can please be louder and they don't do it, I mean, we're done.
It's the first time the director gets to see you as a performer and to know what your skills, just the initial theatrical skills are.
Right.
Do you have the ability to stand up in front of somebody without crying?
Right.
Unfortunately, like when we audition 7-8-year-olds for a show, sometimes they break down. They just the pressure of standing up in front of all those people is too much.
They're just doing what everyone else wants to do.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Can you do it without breaking down? Can you project your voice to the back of the auditorium? Can you just stand and be poised, which sometimes is one of the most difficult tasks for an actor?
Well, right. I think it's more difficult today because 35 years ago when I first came out here and auditioned for, there was no such thing as miking people. Now, kids come up through high schools and they do musicals in high school or plays in high school and they all wear mics.
Oh, yeah.
So why should they come out to the theater and be told that they have to project any farther than just what's in the front row because they're used to talking like this and being able to be heard over the theater.
And they have no stage presence because they aren't pushing their voices at all.
Yeah, I think it's difficult today for young people.
No, that's one of my
pet
peeves with some of the high school productions that they have around here.
You can't hear them at all.
Every kid has got a damn body mic on, and so they figure they can just talk like they're standing in the line.
That's a training process. I mean,
I
think people are letting.
It's difficult if you get someone who is fairly inaudible, and you say, "Well, can you make it a little louder?" And it's not a matter of them projecting and retaining a soft, because that may be the character, you know. then they'll start yelling. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you want either. No, you're right. You know? And it's not their fault that they haven't been taught how to do that.
It's unfortunately the kid who had the lead in The Sound of Music last semester, you know, or something at school.
As Dee Dee says, with three or four rehearsals a week for 6 weeks, do you have time to take somebody like that and really teach them how to project to the back wall?
Mm-hmm. Well, right. and then that goes into casting and some other things. You know, right. As a director, do you cast? And how many times do you cast somebody that you know is going to be a weak link, hoping that you can bring them along?
And then
it depends
that's
on
director's
how you,
ego. Well, to I mean, think you can do that.
Well, sometimes you may not have a choice because you may not have enough people.
But there's
audition.
A saying about in community theater that 90% of success is casting the right people.
Oh. Well, sure it is, but it's I mean, I always go by the rule of thumb. Like it depends on the size of the cast, but I can always afford one that I've got to drag through the production. And especially if I think it's somebody that I can actually teach something to, and usually I can do it. You know, I mean, if they've got the natural, you know, if it's obvious they want to do it, and they just haven't been exposed to, you know, how to do it, they can get it. Mm-hmm. You know, well, they can
sometimes.
Yeah. No, you don't hit a home run every time, but. Sometimes they come a long way.
So,
I guess that's part of community theater.
That is
being able to give people. However, I am always in favor of if someone who's never done anything before, no matter how well they read at an audition, I would certainly put them in a smaller role first and see what they're like when they actually get up there.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And yet I remember somebody who, when I first came there, it was an older lady, and she gave the worst auditions I've ever heard in my life. It was like, okay, this is English. Are you familiar with the language?
Wow.
But when she got in character and got on that stage, you just couldn't beat her. She was wonderful.
Hmm. I'm curious, how many, in terms of performance level, do you have an issue? Is it difficult in community theater to find people that are willing to give you performance level at rehearsals? Or are there people that are transformed completely from performance to rehearsal, like you don't recognize, like where has that person been for 6 weeks or whatever?
You have a little bit of both. I mean, I like to try and give performance level as much as possible during every rehearsal when I'm in a show. Yeah. I mean, you just
don't get that though.
But there are a lot of people who just don't spark until that last.
No, I don't. Get, I usually 99% of people will not give you performance level until at least until the book's out of their hand.
There are people that
are
more
out of your hand.
Self-conscious about performing when the director and two or three people are sitting out front than they are when there's a whole audience.
Yeah. Well, sure, it's easier.
Yeah,
an audience is white noise, and the director is critical. That's true too. Yeah. So, but as an actor, so read the dang script, right?
Oh, you can, yeah.
Yeah. Always prepare. Read the dang script. Be prepared.
Right.
Does it bother you as a director? And it does me a little bit. And this is community theater, because it probably doesn't happen that much in professional theater. Maybe it does. But in community theater, when people come in and you've got a group of people who have never auditioned before and someone that you have worked with a long time comes in and that you know is good and is maybe likely to get a part, okay, comes in, gives you a big hug and kiss and all that kind of stuff, while the rest of the actors who don't know anybody are sitting there waiting to audition. Does that bother you? I mean, I always think, gee, I hope they don't think that this is like a done deal. It always worries me a little bit. I always think, geez, what, you know, I don't want people to feel like they're, you know, not in the click.
I think what's hard though is that you know, that's a fine line because we're, as a community theater, we are a community. We're a group of friends, you know, and hopefully with this, hopefully with this new show or whatever, that there will be some new friends that we can add. But it's really hard. How do you distance? Are you supposed to ignore them during that process? And maybe you do. Maybe we just say, you know, the director stays in the director's aisle. The director's aisle is roped off, and there's no
That's
direct
a little
contact.
Odd, though.
With
I mean,
them,
when so. I go into an audition, I mean, the difference between doing it in the professional world and in the community theater world is that in the professional world, there's a waiting room and then a room. So nobody in the waiting room sees what happens in the room.
Right.
So when you go in the room, and if you've worked with the director three times before, you give them a hug, hug, generally, and you visit for a minute or 30 seconds or whatever it is. In community theater, you're all in one big room, so there's no privacy.
One artistic director that we unfortunately hired a number of years ago, that everyone sat in the lobby and he had auditions
in
the green room. In the green room. So you all sat in the lobby and one by one you went in to the green room.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really strange.
For
us.
Wow.
Yeah. For community theater, who's used to everybody sitting in the auditorium and, you know, hearing what's going on.
With our youth theater and with our when I've been directing the summer musical, we've been splitting up the group and the vocalists stay outside the green room and we do the vocal auditions one by one in the green room.
Uh-huh.
Especially for kids, it seems that they will release a little bit easier
if they're not in front of all
their
friends,
in front of
their peers.
So
we
try not to scare them so much. Another real big pet peeve of mine before we leave this topic, and we may come back to it at some point, but people being late for auditions is not kosher. And I wish more and more people would learn that they need to come early, get their audition materials filled out, and be in the auditorium ready to go. So hey, everybody, listen to that, because it's a real reflection on who you are as well. If you can't make it to an audition on time, what's to say you're going to make it to your rehearsals on time? And that's a whole other story about starting rehearsals on time.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, you know, you've got to be ready to go, know what your time schedule is. And if you can't make it, call and say, you know what, I'm realizing that I can't get off work. I want to be there tonight. However, I'm going to be 10 minutes late and let them know. And then there's a preparation process.
I've had that happen a lot.
There.
At least I've had actors call me and say, or like, I really want to try. I really want to audition, but I've got my child's first communion and this is it. And I'm not going to be there. Whatever.
Because it shows responsibility. And
if
there's one thing, because we only rehearse 4 to 5 days a week, sometimes the responsibility of being there, being on time and knowing that that person can be relied upon as a director makes me feel a whole lot better.
Absolutely. Right. And by the same token, you really are much more inclined to cast someone who you know is reliable.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than somebody who may be very good but has a history of not showing up or
having
being
a vacation
late all the time or, you know.
Yeah.
Because as John says, you have 3, maybe 4 nights a week, but usually 3, and you rehearse for 3 hours tops because everybody has to go home and get up for work the next day. So you really have to utilize every single minute of that time. Mm-hmm. And you can't have somebody that's, maybe it's not much, it's just 10, 15 minutes, but still.
It's very disrespectful.
It's disrespectful, mm-hmm. and it stops the rehearsal process from going forward,
you
know? So be on time.
Be on time.
That's our motto.
Be on time to audition.
Dress appropriately.
Dress appropriately.
Be prepared.
Don't overdress.
Oh, God. Are we scaring everybody off?
And experiment.
Experiment. Have some. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yes, have fun in the audition if you can.
Yeah.
Have some fun with the audition. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, what are we doing this for, right? I mean,
if you're not having fun, it's not for the enormous amounts of money that we make.
No, it's not.
Sure.
No, it's not. I mean, if you're doing it for money, that's a different motivation. Right, Dee Dee?
Yes, it is.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for Theater Geeks today. Please stop by theatergeeks.com and go to the online store if you are interested in a Theater Geeks hat. Please buy a Theater Geeks hat because Dee Dee wants one. And you see, if I don't sell enough hats, then I can't afford to buy one for Dee Dee. Anyway, that's the point. So, please stop by. Also, let us know if you have a question or something you'd like us to cover on an upcoming episode of Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schell.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
And Dee Dee's an honorary geek.
Dee Dee's honorary.
Thank you.
All the time.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, or just a question, or just a comment, use our feedback form at theatergeeks.com. Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.